Today is the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. It's also legendary Arizona architect Paolo Soleri's birthday. So our co-host Lauren Gilger took a drive up north to Soleri's experimental community of Arco Santi recently to take a tour and learn more about where it sits 50 years in. Hey, Lauren.
Hey, guys. So I went up there and met longtime resident and senior advisor Mary Hoadley recently. And when I say longtime, I mean it. Hoadley has lived in this alternative kind of city since 1970, when construction there began. She was just out of college, and she said her college boyfriend came to Arco Santi to work for Soleri, and she came to visit him for 2 weeks and never left.
Frankly, it was just so exciting to me that Soleri was going off out here into the wilderness, in a way, to try to do something so radically different, but that touched all of those issues that for me were important in the 60s as a college student then, from the environment to segregation to, you know, inequality of access to the good things of life, war, all those things Soleri was trying to touch with this very simple idea of, well, let's try to do something different about the way we organize the built environment. And to me, that was, I don't know, I got addicted.
Soleri studied under Frank Lloyd Wright, and his resulting work shows both what he learned from the architectural master and how he wanted to push beyond it. Arco Santi was meant to be a new way of life that combats the massive sprawl that he saw developing in the world around him. But 50 years later, what was planned for the community is only 3% built. But Hoadley says the vision continues despite that.
A lot of people say, oh, Arco Santi is supposed to be like this utopia. It's this ideal. And it's not that at all. It's just meant to be an expression of that idea of coming together. And this is one way, one aspect of how it could happen. But for Soleri, all life is evolutionary. It's a process. We're constantly moving and developing and hopefully learning from now, from the past, and trying to create, you know, a better future.
Soleri died in 2013 at age 93, and his name has become somewhat marred in recent years after one of his daughters came forward in 2017 accusing him of sexual abuse. Hoadley says that's been difficult for her and for some of the other people who have really dedicated their lives to the project, but she stressed as we walked around the grounds that this place is about much more than Soleri himself.
It's really important walking around to remember that at least 10,000 people paid to work over the last 50 years to put everything here that's here, even though what we have is only 3% of what we want to build. But that commitment of people inspired by Soleri to not only bring resources in terms of paying a workshop fee, but then to stay here 6 weeks or longer to actually contribute 40 hours a week of work is really extraordinary. Oh, this is just like the most perfect day.
So this is... it's built on a hillside here, right? Yeah, like you're looking down over this sort of canyon.
Right. So that was one of the things that Soleri decided to do when he found this site. So we do own 860 acres here, surrounded by 3,200 acres of state grazing lease. And we are committed to only build on maybe 25 acres of that 860, and that's to stick with this commitment to have bounded density. And so instead of building on the flat, which we do have some flat agricultural land along the Agua Fria River that bisects the property, there's this commitment to build on the marginal land, the hillside, the difficult site. But that gives you this wonderful opportunity for views and really interesting architecture.
Yeah.
So now we've come to the ceramics apse, and it's essentially a quarter of a sphere. And what Soleri understood early on was, if you site this facing south in the summer, as we're approaching now, the apse provides a shaded outdoor workspace. In the winter, when the sun's much lower in the sky compared to us, it's a sun trap. So we'd be out here freezing, and Maddie, who's in there working, would be in her shirt sleeves. So all his architecture tries to consider the elements, whether it's the sun, the orientation, or the way the winds blow, et cetera. So he's very aware of the environment.
And this was part of his entire philosophy, right? This arcology that he created.
Right. Arcology, architecture, and ecology, the idea of that they're symbiotic. So he understood early on, sort of as a principle of life, that as things get more complex, they tend to get more compact. He called it miniaturized, he felt that the built environment should take into account that kind of principle. So that's how he came up with the idea of arcology as a dense, bounded, three-dimensional plumbing system that provides all the good things of urban living, variety of activities, opportunities for different people to meet each other, etc., your own private housing, but then this instant access, not mediated by the automobile, to all those wonderful aspects of urban living. And at the same time, when that kind of density and almost intensity, you've reached your limit, well, you can just look outward to the natural environment, or you can just take a little walk and you're in it. You don't have to get in an automobile, plan a trip to the White Mountains, get stuck in traffic getting there, et cetera.
I mean, like, so that's so relevant today, right? Like, and probably more relevant today than it ever was when he even began this philosophy, because we talk so much about sustainability now. We talk so much about creating ways to live that are not going to continue to impact our environment in the way that they have. And that's essentially what he was doing way before that was even, way before sustainability was even a word.
Right. Well, he had that understanding that the current model, the automobile-driven model, the constant sprawl development single-family home model, that the logical conclusion of that was spreading over everything, what he would call the time-space straitjacket, where if the further you have to live out to get affordable housing, the longer it takes you to commute to work, you know, all those issues. He did, at Frank Lloyd Wright's, he was exposed to Broadacre City, which was Wright's idea that he developed in the 30s, which is really the basis for the whole suburban development that we have today. When he saw Broadacre City, you know, he understood the logical conclusion of it, and so therefore he came up with his own idea, which is radically different, which is compact, three-dimensional apartment living, not single-family home living.
So it was an adoption of some of the things and a rejection of some of the others.
Yeah. Well, maybe not reject, but reaction to, and maybe building on.
Tell me a little bit about, while we walk here, tell me a little bit about what kept you here all those years. Like, I can understand as a college student being inspired by that and deciding to stay, but I mean, this is decades and decades later.
Well, for me, the simple idea is so worthy and so deserving of energy. And I think, but here, this is like an incredibly authentic experience of people working together to do something meaningful, to work on something larger than yourself. And I think all of us need to have some larger organizing thing in our lives that helps direct our good energy. So, you know, the first years here, we thought we'd build Arcosani in 5 years for 3,000 people.
And then, the entire city?
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, this was sitting around the campfire, you know, the first summer. And then we would be in high demand to go all over the world, work with indigenous populations, help them get organized to build in a self-reliant way little urban centers. So you could have a model where people who've been agriculturalists all their lives could continue the agricultural connection, but they'd have access to that the urban living, which is variety, inspiration, so there could be a balance in their lives, and there would be a big improvement in the whole planet. You know, we thought we were going to save the world that way.
So 50 years later, and you're still here, and 3% is built. It's not like there's no hope. There's is obviously a vibrant place, but how does that feel? How do you reconcile, you know, sort of the loss of that?
Well, for me, it's the two sides of the coin. You know, you could say, wow, this is not much to show for 50 years of work. But on the other side of it, this is an improbable accomplishment here, this focusing of the energy of so many people to build what's here that can function as an inspiration to every new person that comes here.
Can we see the amphitheater?
Sure, yeah. Kali Soleri Amphitheater. In the East Crescent Complex here. We started back in 1975, and it's still underway. And we did have 2,000 people here 2 weeks ago for Form, and it was wonderful. I saw Pussy Riot here, incredible performance, Florence and the Machine. They had like 32 different incredible contemporary acts over 3 days that were extraordinary.
When you're looking at sort of Form and some of these really successful events that have come to Arcosanti just in recent years and the popularity of it, like it's growing, I think, in terms of just its recognition, and it's a cool thing these days, you know? How do you reconcile that and the way that it's being perceived maybe outside of outside of this place by the rest of the world, and the original vision and the things that were originally intended here. Do you think that they can kind of live in harmony?
Yeah, I think they complement each other. That was one of the thoughts I had during Forum was, okay, there's 2,500 people here. That's half our target population. Isn't it wonderful to see these spaces densely populated with activity? I mean, for me, the whole point of this is not to just sit here as an architectural monument, but to be used. There's a heavy emphasis on trying to show people by example what the values are here and to try to educate people about them while they're here and to appreciate that they're here. Just that experience of, oh, wow, this is beautiful. I mean, that's the reaction, the inescapable reaction of the place. The key aspects of this place speak to people that come here. And to have 2,500 people be exposed to me is like, it's wonderful.
Mary Hoadley, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. So glad that you've been here on this most beautiful of days.